Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, ESPN app, wherever you can, man. Do that. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. All I can think is that you are a hater. I am back from my vacation. We missed out on a few things while I was gone. Some crazy LeBron Kyrie drama. Y'all losing y'all minds thinking that the NBA postseason needs to be receded. But I feel like this is one other thing that happened that was kind of important. So LeBron went to the Lakers. We've only been hearing that LeBron might go to the Lakers for 2 years, right? Like we've only been hearing this. This was not a shock. It's interesting also, though, chronologically, just to go and look at the different ways that LeBron has handled free agency. It's been lower and lower key every time. We went from the decision to the whole Sports Illustrated thing with Lee Jenkins. And now this time, just kind of a statement that comes out from his agent. Free agency started. Magic Johnson came over to the crib. And basically, that was that. Apparently, they sat down for 3 hours, and then they talked. And then once LeBron had talked to Magic, it was like, okay, cool, I'm going to go ahead and go here. There's a report that done come out today about the Sixers, and the Sixers said that LeBron was strongly considering them. Why do you think LeBron was strongly considering them? Because he told them that. That seems like the only way that they would know that. How do they have spies in LeBron's crib? Ain't nobody like seriously consider going to play for y'all. I think he felt like it was probably a good idea to hear you out because your roster ain't that bad. But come on, man, he ain't give you no serious consideration. He made the call that he was going to go to Los Angeles. Now, the mood of the Lakers, I think, was interesting for a couple of reasons. One, LeBron signed a 4-year contract. Why? Because he respects Magic Johnson more than he respects Dan Gilbert. That's why. Dan Gilbert, he learned his lesson. You got to keep the fire to Dan Gilbert at all times and make sure that he acts right. Magic, he's looking at Magic like, nah, don't worry about it, baby. I'm going to be here for a while. You can make plans around the idea that I'm going to be here for a while. LeBron's looking at Dan Gilbert like, I mean, I'm here now. You know, like, we good. I'm posted. I don't know why you need to hear no more from me. Yeah, no. So, yeah, no, that is what that had to be under that circumstance. And this is the first time in a long time that LeBron is making the long play, which is almost counterintuitive because he made a quick play when he was 25 going to get it together with Wade and Bosch. Now, I admit, if there's ever been anything that I think that I was right about and other people weren't at the time that it happened, it was my belief that going to play with Wade and Bosch was more of a long play than it, you know, than people did. Like, that first team was good, but it was really not a championship level of good, right? They lost because they just weren't good enough. The next two, obviously the ones they won the championship, but that, I knew it was going to take a year in order to build that team. Remember, that first team, they acquired Mike Bibby to play point guard, keeping in mind that Carlos Arroyo started the season at point guard for that team. Mike Bibby got a standing ovation because they were so bad at point guard at that point. Like, I knew that was going to be a longer play. LeBron saw it as a quick play. He made the quick play with Miami. He went to Cleveland, and no matter what he said in the letter, that was a quick play. You're talking about all the young players they had. Then they packaged a bunch of them, got them out of there to get Kevin Love, and boom, they made the quick play. This isn't a quick play with the Lakers. Like, none of us think that this Lakers team is one that can win a championship as it is presently constructed. None of us do. I mean, we'll see if maybe they get Kawhi Leonard, but Kawhi Leonard is a maybe. Is absolutely a maybe at this point. So maybe they get him and that changes things. They didn't get Paul George, and it sounds like LeBron had some idea that they were not going to get Paul George, and maybe wasn't that excited about the idea of getting a dude that doesn't make shots at the end of games. Who knows, right? Like, maybe that's what it was. I don't know, but now he's there, and they got this bizarre team that Magic is putting together because they're loading up the team with 1-year contracts so they can go back to the well next year in free agency when they expect the class to be loaded, right? But they went and got Lance Stevenson. They got JaVale McGee. They got Rondo. Gabe, did I miss anybody else while I was gone that they went and got? And we can't understand why the hell anybody would do that.
That's my general feeling on the subject.
Like, is Swaggy P still under contract with the Wizards? Like, it is actually very interesting. The Lakers seem to be putting together one of these weirdo, like, teams full of space cadets. While have you noticed that the Wizards are reassembling a team full of space cadets? Keep in mind, the Wizards had one of the legendary groups of space cadets, right? With Gilbert Arenas, Nick Young, Andre Blatch, JaVale McGee.
Deshaun Stevenson.
Oh, yeah, Deshaun Stevenson. Javaris Crittenden. You remember him?
Yeah.
You remember
he's... Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, there was that guy. yo, what are they doing? Because are they getting Dwight Howard? Isn't that the word on the street? They're going to try to get Dwight Howard?
They got Dwight Howard.
They got Dwight Howard. Okay. What are they doing? What is your plan with all those guys? So it's going to be John Wall, who he and Bradley Beal always had their own set of issues. They just got Austin Rivers, right? And I don't think Austin is a space cadet as much as people just don't like him. Kelly Oubre, he played for them. Don't they have a Morris brother? They still have a Morris brother, right?
They have Markieff Morris.
Yes, all right. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know, maybe you know the NBA better than I do, but you can give me the individual name of a Morris brother. They're the same dude to me. I've been trying for at least 10 years to try to tell them dudes apart. You'd be like, no, that one's Markieff. Okay. Like, the difference between Marcus and Markieff to me is the difference between country and Western. I don't really know where the division is. I don't know where the split is. But that's what the Lakers seem to have going there, and they got their young players. Now, Gabe, you are a Lakers fan, and we talked about this to get Kawhi, that you were kind of like me, where you gotta give something up, whether you want to or not, you gotta give something up. I think we all agree that you don't want to give all of those guys up. But what'd you think about Lonzo putting out there that he had a knee surgery, which seemed to be an attempt to make sure he was out of those packages?
I thought that was slick, man. Real slick. Get that info out there before the Lakers want it. Make you less attractive as a trade package.
Although, to be fair, did the Lakers plan to not tell anybody about this if they were going to make a trade?
Yeah, it's like, you know what? Hey, by the way, we're keeping this on the low.
Yeah.
Lonzo's not in camp right now, but he's somewhere.
Yeah, he's in Lithuania, man. He's helping his brothers move out of their spot.
Always helping him move into L.A. You know? Yeah. They needed a lot of help that day.
Yeah, like, what do you like? I mean, that's the one thing. You can let this out, and that's fine if you want that information to be in the streets. But the reality is, at some point, somebody was going to find out. Like, what do you think they were going to do? Somebody was going to trade for Lonzo, and Lonzo was going to get there with a bad knee, and it was never going to come back up? And they were going to be like, oh, damn. Oh, but I guess it is as is. No, man, they give people physicals. Got to read the fine print, baby.
It ain't dry yet.
Yeah, I thought I told y'all that the other day. So, like, this isn't a championship team. It's not. But, so, do you have one of the young guys that you like more than the others?
I like Brandon Ingram, man. He's a two-way player.
Really? I don't see it. At least I haven't seen it. I'm not saying it can't be there or that it's not there. But I haven't seen what a lot of other people see. But I feel a lot of people who I trust speak confidently about what they see in him.
Are you team Kuzma then, or are you team Lonzo?
Ooh, I like Lonzo.
This is kind of like taking it back to the 90s, like which Spice Girl do you like the best? Or like which NSYNC person are you? Are you team Justin?
That's kind of, there's something to that, right? Like people do that with New Edition a great deal. Also, my thing with Lonzo is, and you tell me this, because I don't feel like Lonzo's a great fit alongside LeBron, because I feel like shooters is the way to go, and we've seen it for a long time. But apparently Magic doesn't think that necessarily, because they went and got Rondo and Lance Stevenson, right?
Yeah, we talked about this, and then I read something, you know, a lot of people were of the opinion that he was like the perfect person to play alongside LeBron because he doesn't need the ball, and when he's in there, he's just like a good basketball player, good team player, keeps the ball moving, plays good defense.
As a finisher, like is he a strong finisher? Because that's going to be the big thing, is he's going to have to be able to finish. Because I think one of the most interesting things, or maybe one of the more interesting things I'll say more accurately about this is, I've always wondered when LeBron was going to understand that he was going to age into being a power forward. And maybe I thought the aging was going to happen sooner, but LeBron's desire to continue to play on the perimeter, I found to be strange, because I thought, yo, like the wheels are going to come off on this, except physically he was able to withstand. He seems to get now that he's going to age into being a power forward. Like, remember this, when Magic comes to make the sell, one of the forgotten things about Magic, and I don't know why, but in the 1995-96 season, Magic Johnson came back after being retired for 5 years and played for the Lakers and averaged 15 points a game, as I recall, as a power forward. He just got out there and put his back to people, and he was so good operating from the post that he was able to make it happen. Now, I don't know how exactly it goes for LeBron trying to play that sort of game, but this is the direction that he goes in. But I'm feeling like that makes shooters an even more of a priority, because LeBron's not going to be in a position to take as many 3-point shots, and he's become a good shooter. Like, I don't know what their ultimate plan is going to be to put together a basketball team, and that's where is where I think Magic Johnson is going to be tested, because look, these old school 80s dudes, when it's time for them to put together teams, you always wonder if they're doing it according to the current paradigm of basketball. It doesn't look like Magic trying to do it right now according to the current paradigm of basketball. But maybe this is, like, this is when we're going to see. Like, Magic did the big thing that he was there to do, which is get LeBron James. Now he and Pelinka got to put together a basketball team. And look, Pelinka's an agent. So I believe that Pelinka's going to be able to do boss work on the cap and stuff like that. But the building of the basketball team, that's got to be Magic. And now we're going to see. We also had other free agents, Gabe. Paul George. Did the Lakers tell him to stay in Oklahoma City, or did he say he was staying in Oklahoma City? I imagine you Lakers fans are telling yourselves that he just said he wanted to stay in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, man. It's a him thing, not an us thing.
Yo, man, shout out to Sam Presti. I don't think we remember we talked about this last time, but they made the effort, right? They went and did the thing that most people don't do. They made a trade for a dude with 1 year left on his contract, and they said, we are going to win him over, and we are going to make this happen. And they did. They absolutely did. Russell had to party at the house. Did you see that? It was like, they had 500 people at the party, Gabe. It was like 500 people for a private party at Russell Westbrook's house in Oklahoma City. And look, I don't, you know, typically encourage this kind of talk. And I think you need to be careful when you ask these sorts of questions. But, Gabe, is it fair for me to ask how many of those people at that party were, what you call them, crisis actors?
Oh boy. Did you survey the scene of what the backyard looked like?
I did not see that.
It looked like a 16-year-old's birthday party with like a bunch of inflatable stuff and a little stage where, you know, you've got some wedding band up there.
Or could
have been, but it was Nas, right?
I just can't figure out how you got 500 people. Like, I got family from Oklahoma City. I feel like they should have invited me to that party because I at least could have brought like 3-4 locals. We would have stopped by Circle J's, got some fish, got full, then we would have showed up and we would have been there, you know? But I just couldn't, like, if you were putting together that kind of party for a Nas show in Oklahoma City, who's putting together the wait list, right? Like, who's putting together the guest list, that is, the people that's getting into that party? I could not believe that. Also, I ask you this, Gabe. Do you think it would be fun to party with Russell Westbrook?
I don't know, man. It didn't look like much fun just from the photos and from the videos. I feel like Russ might be fun to party with. Maybe not at his house, though, so you always have an out.
Here's what I feel like it would be with Russ and party. I feel like Russ can throw a dope party, right? And I feel like Russ will be in the party having a really good time, but he won't stop being Russ and being so intense. Like somebody on Twitter said, is to be Russ, the dude that grabs your arm and puts it up and down, talking about, get loose, have a good time.
What, you're not having a good time?
Yeah.
Get on the dance floor.
Yeah, everybody dance. Hey, man, what you doing sitting over there, man? Get off the wall and dance. Like, Russ, man, I've been dancing for 2 hours. I said, get off the wall and dance. Like, I could see that. Melo did not go to the party. Somebody said something about whether Melo was going to be there. I was like, man, you think Melo is going to come in the summer to Oklahoma City for anything? The best you got to get Melo there is Nas? You think Melo ain't never seen Nas live before? I don't need to see Nas at this party. What are you talking about? I also believe that the only reason that Russell Westbrook would have Nas do the party is because he wanted to do Hate Me Now, because something tells me that Hate Me Now is Russell Westbrook's favorite song ever. Now, does any song sound more Russell Westbrook than that one?
No.
No, that's him. Like, in fact, that's what he told Nas. Hey, Nas, look here. I ain't even never heard Illmatic before. I ain't never heard that. I don't know nothing about that. No. I like that song you did with Lauryn Hill, but I really like her part. She ain't even going to be here, man. I'm actually like West Coast with this. But I just want you to play Hate Me Now like 17 times.
I kind of imagine it going like, you know, when you go to a concert and the artist will stop singing, kind of hold up the mic to the crowd.
Yes.
I kind of just imagine Nas holding up his hand with the mic in it, and then Russ just saying, you could hate me now,
yes,
but I won't stop now.
He can't wait. It'll be so, and Paul George trying to get in on the act when he gets there. But yo, man, they made it happen. They got him to say, I don't know how exactly they're going to put a team together, though, because they're already making moves to get under the luxury tax because they just can't afford to pay all that money for it. And they're going to get Melo up out the paint. The question for them is, what is Andre Robertson going to look like when he comes back? Because they were able, with Andre Robertson, they had a team that I had a chance to go deep in the West because they were good enough on defense to make that happen. He's got a torn patella tendon. I don't know what the recovery is like from a torn patella tendon. But if he comes back and he looks decent, like, this is an interesting one. Meanwhile, in Houston, Gabe, somehow Houston signed Chris Paul to stay, and we're like, I don't know about that one. Did you think you were going to feel like that a year ago?
I feel like I've seen the decline of Chris Paul over the last couple of years, just in terms of his injuries and where he ends up in the postseason. Every year on the bench, holding his ankle, holding his hammy. It's not a good look, man.
Yeah, because these are old man injuries. Like, this isn't like when he had his hand broken or his thumb that year or whatever. Like, you know, that can happen to anybody. These old man injuries are like the hamstring and the groin and everything else. And you see that, you know, he's getting a little bulkier these days. Because look, he's not young.
He's getting a little bulkier these days. From what you saw in the postseason, looked like he gained a few pounds.
He's getting a little bulkier. Like, I mean, he's at that age. What is he, 33 years old?
You know, right.
Yeah, like, hey, man, this is what happens when you're 33 years old. And look, if they are going to run with him at that age, D'Antoni's got to change. They can't do what they did with all that isolation. We saw how that wore their players down. They can't do that. And losing Ariza and losing Mbah Mute, those things matter. Like, those things at the fringes with the kind of team that they put together, those things are going to matter. And now they are slipping in the West. DeAndre Jordan went to the Mavs. That was weird. Yeah, that's what I got. That was weird.
Yeah, there's nothing really to add there. The Mavs are just irrelevant.
Yeah, like that's, but the fact that he showed, like, after what happened the last time, and considering the agent that was behind all of that at the time, you know, he's no longer with us, because there's a lot of question at the time that his agent had worked that deal out for him to go, and DeAndre was kind of a passenger on this, but the agent isn't here to do anything with that. Like, it's not even that. He just wound up now. Time was up for the Clippers. And Mark Cuban, after all that smacky talk, was willing to let it ride. And now he's there. Oh, by the way, Chandler Parsons, the dude that was so mad at DeAndre Jordan for not being there. Not only does he not play there, he's in Memphis stealing money from people. Like, I bet Mark Cuban, after it was all said and done, wish he hadn't signed Chandler Parsons in the first place. Hey, man. It happens. By the way, Gabe, you would think that by now we'd be done talking about Kyrie and LeBron, right? You think that would be over? All right, guys, this is great. I found out about this after I got off the plane from Portugal. I found out that there was the Cavs beat writers did a, it was a Dave McMenamin, Joe Varden.
And Jason Lloyd of the Athletic.
Jason Lloyd, there we go. Who? They did a fascinating discussion about the LeBron-Kyrie situation. And it's like, where to begin? The first place to begin, and there's a reason why I bring this up, because I think this ties into the thing with the Lakers and LeBron and whatever's going to ultimately happen right there. What we learn about Kyrie in his decision to leave the Cavs, and in the way that things went, not just the end of the time in Cleveland with LeBron, but those 3 years in totality. Some guys really just want to be the best player on the team. Like, there's a certain joy and fun, I imagine, that comes from being the best player on the team. You just want to be the star on the team. And so with the Cavs, with Kyrie, when Kyrie signed that extension to play for the Cavs, look, man, the Cavs were awful when he signed that the first extension. They were awful, awful, and everybody looked to be miserable. Gabe, remember that was the year that they had the rumors that Dion Waiters had gone upside Kyrie's head? Do you remember that?
One of many Dion Waiters rumors, to
yes.
be honest.
Yes, but it was a miserable time to be there, but Kyrie signed that extension happily. You know why? Kyrie was like, yo, I'm about to be the star of the team. They gonna pay me like I'm the star of the team. I want to be the franchise player on the team. And then they went and got LeBron, and everybody else is like, yo, we about to win. And Kyrie's like, we might win, but I won't. He wanted to be the best player on the team. Now, never mind the fact, I feel pretty confident saying that there's been no loss for Kyrie whatsoever for the time that he spent playing with LeBron James. He is more famous because of the time that he spent playing with LeBron James. He probably got more money in his pocket from being more visible and for being more famous. He is now accomplished in a way that he'll never have to answer a question ever in his career about not winning a championship. Like, all of that was win for him, except he wants to be the best player on the team. Like, he wants to be the guy that people come to play with him. But you could have looked at it as LeBron came to play with him. Like, do you think, Gabe, you think LeBron would have signed that contract to come back to Cleveland if Kyrie wasn't there?
I don't know, man. I mean, it seemed like his intent at the time was to come back home regardless, and that it was just kind of nice to have Kyrie there, but it certainly made it more attractive.
Yeah, I mean, they made them a good enough team for him to go and win some games, right? And that's with, like, that is LeBron coming to play with you, except Kyrie wants to be the best player on the team. And so what these guys talked about in this podcast is that Kyrie never wanted LeBron to come to Cleveland. He never wanted him to come to Cleveland. When they first got together, it wound up being beef. LeBron out here questioning how tough Kyrie is. Kyrie didn't like that LeBron has sway within the organization. Also, I like this one, Gabe. I think you saw this where they said that, that LeBron, they came to him with the Kyrie trade. It doesn't sound like LeBron's thing was don't trade Kyrie. It looks like his thing was that trade offer is bad.
Yeah, I mean, they had said in the show that LeBron didn't do anything until it was too late to try and keep him. So clearly he wasn't trying to keep him around. It's just about getting the best teammates around him.
Yeah, like this trade is not the Heat. Like, this is not the one that we need to make. But I think that this is a fascinating insight into a lot of NBA players. I think it's an important insight into a lot of NBA players that we want everybody to be all told 100% concerned about winning. The only thing that matters is winning, winning, winning. Except there's a lot of things in life, man. There are a lot of things in life. And not for all these cats, winning is not at the top of the list. And the beat writers seem to kind of intimate that Kyrie is one of those types of people. You know, that's him. And he was in a situation where he wanted to grow. He was in a situation where he wanted to be a bigger thing. And LeBron was in that way the whole time, like in that way. And that whole Cleveland team, Gabe, it sounds like it was just a mess. That it's a wonder that they were able to get everything done that they were, based on how much they basically just kind of struggled to get along.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like everything that we saw from the outside and kind of could surmise just from the tea leaves was true.
Yes.
And then some.
Yes. That is, I think that's probably the best way to put it, is that everything that you read from a distance, you know what it kind of reminds me of? You remember when it became clear to us that Beyonce was giving Jay-Z the cold shoulder, right? We used to see her sitting at them games. She wouldn't even look him in the face, but would be smiling LeBron up and down. You remember those? And you'd be like, yo, man, Jay looked like he's sleeping on the couch. And you're like, man, you don't know nothing about that. They just doing this for marketing, da-da-da. Never mind that this was after we saw Jay-Z get his behind kicked in that elevator by his sister-in-law. You remember that? His sister-in-law gave him the beats in the elevator, which is something that not good. But people, like, you saw it. And then all the music came out, and you were like, yep, this is about what we thought it was, that they was having some beef, and then they had to figure it out, and they had to get through the beef, and then on the back end, we found out after the fact. I feel like that's what we got with the Cleveland situation there, is it was all a mess, and the biggest reason it was a mess was Kyrie never wanted LeBron to come back. Never did. And today, it's a good thing he didn't say that out loud, because I'm pretty sure that if Kyrie would have said, I don't want LeBron to come back, he would have got his trade wish a lot sooner. And by a lot sooner, I mean like 2014. Hey guys, did you ever imagine that in the season of free agency that the single most controversial signing would be one for a guy who got paid all of $5.3 million to play and who is coming off an Achilles tear? But that is what happened when DeMarcus Cousins signed to play with the Golden State Warriors. Somehow, some way, this was the signing that made everybody say that the world was unfair. Now, the argument, I guess, behind this is basically just the idea that DeMarcus Cousins is an all-star. This team already has 4 all-stars. Now they're going to have 5 all-stars. They added a guy who averaged something like 27 points and 10 rebounds a game, and he is an incredibly skilled player. He really, really is. But dude, he's coming off an Achilles tear. That is the single most debilitating injury a basketball player can suffer. The list of guys who have come back like looking like their former selves after an Achilles injury is short. Dominique Wilkins is at the top of that list. After you get past Dominique, you're talking about what? Like Rudy Gay last year? And Rudy Gay averaged the same points per minute last year as he had the season before. The problem was, though, he played a much smaller workload, like fewer minutes. Wesley Matthews is a guy that people try to point to as like a dude that's back. But Wesley Matthews at his best averaged 16.5 points a game. He averaged 12.7 points a game last year, and his shooting percentage has plummeted since he had that Achilles injury. Like, it's bad news. We're talking about a 270, 280-pound dude, and you want him to play for the Warriors going up and down the floor and playing in a style that really isn't necessarily that conducive to his game, and you think that this is the one that's going to break up the league? Yo, correct me if I'm wrong, we can't even look at him to be ready to play until February, right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was shocked after I came back on the grid to see the way that people were responding to this deal and why this is the one that really threw, they just made everybody so mad. Number one, the Warriors aren't going to be able to keep him for long. In fact, the Warriors are only going to be able to have him next season because they don't have his bird rights. And if they don't have his bird rights, that means as they're over the cap, the only, like the, they can only pay him 120% of his 2018-2019 salary in order to keep him. That means that they would really only be able to pay him about $6.5 million the next year. And DeMarcus Cousins ain't doing that again, right? If he plays well enough, he's going to have somebody that's willing to take him on. Number two, guys, okay. You know, I tend to stick up for players and stuff because, I mean, I think by and large they get a bad rap from people in my business and everything else. And I get really apprehensive when people start, like, saying things about guys but not really giving you very particular examples of what they're talking about. Anytime I talk to somebody about DeMarcus Cousins, and I was a bit of a defender of DeMarcus Cousins on a lot of things, and I'd ask, you know, well, is it as bad as people say? And the reaction that I got pretty much universally was, it's worse. Like, he's not an easy dude to deal with. Like, a lot of what happened in Sacramento was not his fault, but he's not the easiest dude in the world to deal with. Can you imagine trying to deal with DeMarcus Cousins under the pressure that he's going to be under next year to try to get back any money that he might have passed up? He's saying that he didn't have any offers. People are saying that there were offers that were there and may have been available and maybe weren't, like, up to the level that he wanted or whatever it is. But, I mean, the stakes are high for him at this point financially. So you want to put him on that team with everything that they got to figure out, you know, and everything that they play for, and the fact that they apparently had their struggles holding it together last year, and you think that DeMarcus Cousins is just like, oh my God, this is unfair? We have no idea how this is going to work. We have no idea if this is going to work, and we really don't have any idea how good a player DeMarcus Cousins is going to be. So, like, to me, it is preposterous the way that people flipped out about this, because they flipped out about it and then went to a point where they started talking about, well, now the West, like, another guy in the West, you know, another guy went to a good team in the West, so we need to change the playoff seedings because the West is so much better than the East. I don't buy it. I do not buy it. There was absolutely a time where I would have bought your argument about how much better the West is than the East in the NBA. And I would say the West is probably better than the East. But guys, do you know who the number three seed last year in the West was? Portland. Portland was the number three seed in the West last year. And they went out there and they got swept by the Pelicans without Boogie Cousins. Those aren't great teams. Like, this idea that if you had, like, you could just take the Pelicans and drop them off in the East and they would win the, or be, like, where would they be in the East? I don't know. Maybe around where they are right now. The East had four teams that won 50 games. The West had two. The West was crazy, crazy, crazy top heavy last year. The Utah Jazz, who lost Gordon Hayward and didn't really replace him with anybody, won 48 games playing in the West last year. I mean, it was not this overwhelming juggernaut of a conference. What they do have, though, obviously, is the Warriors. The Warriors are at the top of the West, and they are the top of the league. And so the idea they added somebody else spooks people. Okay, I get that, but I'm not saying why changing this playoff seeded thing is going to do anything that, like, really makes the league that much different. I don't see it. I also think that people don't think deeply enough about it. If you are going to make such a change, you have to change the way the NBA season is played. You have to change the way it's scheduled. So I think there's a value in having conferences where you play some teams three or four times a year and you only play some teams two times a year. I like the idea of having NBA finals where you got teams that you really haven't seen play against each other that much. I'm with that. I like the idea of having playoff rivalries where you set this up where you're in situations where guys can play each other over and over again and have this, you know, 2-3 year run. So, like, the Sixers and the Celtics, for example, there's a good chance those teams are going to be facing off against each other year after year after year in the playoffs. I love that. Like, I think those things are good. And I think that when you would lose those things, you would miss them after a certain point. I also don't think that you want a postseason with all the travel that's going to be required if you ditch this. Like the first time you get you a Portland Miami first round series, you're going to realize, okay, maybe this ain't the greatest thing in the world to do. And I imagine for the players, the idea of doing a series where you're going between time zones, if you don't have to do that in the only time you got to do that in the NBA finals where you go from like Atlantic to Pacific, man, that's a monster on your body. Like all of that. Like, I just think it's an easy overreaction to talk about how dominant the West is, but I don't think the actual evidence stacks up to that. And if Boogie Cousins was the thing that drove you over the line on that, yeah, nah, I'm sorry, you look at the world a whole lot differently than I do. But here's the thing, after you get past the Warriors, now that the Rockets seem to be a little bit decimated, after you get past the Warriors, what about the top of the West is that much better than the top of the East? Like, the top of the East is going to be a presumably improved Boston, a presumably improved Philadelphia, and a still pretty good Toronto, and we saw from the Pacers in the first round against the Cavs last year, they might be a team that takes the leap. Milwaukee's going to actually have a coach. They could be a team that takes the leap. It is entirely possible the next year what you talk about in the East is how the East is better. Like, I think somebody talked about the last four years of all NBA teams or something like that. Basically, all those guys except for two play in the West right now. Yeah, those are the teams that passed. Let's see what the all-NBA teams look like in the future, because let me tell you names you're going to see on there. Simmons, Embiid, Irving, right? Like all these guys that play for Boston, Antetokounmpo. There's a lot of future in the East. The question that needs to be asked is, how was it that the West managed to be so much better than the East all this time? Like, was there something in there that you could build, you know, try to work around to prevent something like this? Because it's the strangest thing in the world that one conference, there's no reason why one conference should have been so much better than the other. Well, okay, one reason. The cities in the West tend to have better weather.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, story number one of the day comes from the transportation industry.
This is Amy Held from NPR. So, have you flown coach lately? What is up with those itty-bitty seats? Flyers Rights, which says it's the biggest nonprofit passenger advocacy group, calls them sardine seats. And it seems like they really are getting tighter. The group says since 1978, seats have moved 3 inches closer together, and it's happening as Americans are moving the other way, growing wider, gaining weight. Well, the group says we don't have to take this sitting down. They've petitioned the Federal Aviation Administration to do something about it, namely to regulate seat size and pitch. That's what we know as legroom. Well, the FAA rejected it, but the case has made its way to the U.S. Court of Appeals, which last year ordered the FAA to revisit the issue from a safety perspective. See, Flyers Rights says it's not just a comfort issue or a discomfort issue. The tiny seats are actually dangerous. How can somebody wedged in evacuate fast in an emergency? Well, last week, the FAA issued its decision and it said, no, we're not going to regulate seat size and spacing because it's not a safety issue. The administration says it's done tests which show that even a larger passenger takes just a couple of seconds to get out of their seat, but this may not be the final word. Flyers Rights says provided there's enough public support, they may file an appeal by next month. Meantime, passengers will stay scrunched.
First of all, Gabe, when she said, have you flown coach lately? I was like, actually, don't tell me more.
Oh, boy.
Tell me what's going on at the back of the plate. I'm a little unaware.
Oh boy. Well, let me tell you about what it's like sitting on coach, right? I was on a plane a couple months ago and it ain't pretty. Let me tell you that much.
Look, and all I'm saying is don't nobody be mad at me for saying that because clearly you understand why I don't fly coach. I'm 6'4", man. I started flying first class for work. And then one day I wound up back in coach and it was so miserable. I was just like, never again. I was in like row 30. It was like some short flight too. And I was just like, nah, homie, I can't even play this game no more. So, I myself got up out the coach game. But here's what I think the problem is. Like when you buy plane tickets, Gabe, what is the number one factor that you base your decision on?
Maybe schedule and then price.
Yeah. I think most people have price number one. I think people are willing to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to save $75 on a fare. And look, I don't blame them because they need that $75, right? But as long as people are simply booking the least expensive flight, then the airline has no incentive to improve your experience because the decision that people seem to have made and their behavior bears this out is I'm willing to endure all these inconveniences for a couple of hours. Like people are willing to put up with it. What you're going to have to do is these companies that are giving more leg room and giving more space, you're just going to have to like give them your business and then maybe other people will come around. But otherwise, man, They are nickel and diamond people to death. They're doing all this stuff because they're like, all you care about is the fair price. That's the only thing you care about. And so if that's all you care about, they're going to exploit you for that, man.
Yeah, it's so amazing to me that the, you know, these unions can't get together and at least put a standard as far as what they cannot go below, right?
Yeah, well, here's the part that gets me also about this. I don't even, like, are they making any additional money by making these seats narrower? Like, it's not like they're making them narrower in a way that allows them to put a fourth seat on the row. You know, like, it just almost just feels like it's cruel.
Yeah. Yeah, it completely, because it's not like you're going to be able to fit another seat in there.
Right.
That's,
like,
that's just not going to happen.
Like, what extra money are you making? Or is the play that we're going to put these seats in that are narrow, and then we'll have some other seats that are not, and then we can nickel and dime you on getting in the other ones? Because I actually don't have a problem with the nickel and dime stuff in a lot of ways. Like, for me, for example, like the exit row, as I said, I'm tall. I would pay more money for an exit row than a person that is a foot shorter than me. You know how mad I get when I walk past the exit row and somebody 5'4" is sitting in it? Well, you know, back when I got that far, I ain't seen an exit row in like 3 years. But yeah, no. Like, I like the ability to pay a little something to get it, but they charging people for nonsensical stuff. And pretty soon they're going to charge you for a chair that's wide enough to fit your behind in it.
All right. Story number two comes from Tech.
Hi, this is Jack Nickus with the New York Times. So if you're a celebrity, you almost certainly have imposters on social media. This is a fact probably many of us know, but the sheer volume of imposters on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and the real-life headaches these fake accounts cause for celebrities might surprise you. We commissioned a study by Social Imposter, a firm that polices public figures' names online, to tally the number of imposters across social media for the 10 most followed people on Instagram. That analysis found nearly 9,000 impersonators for those 10 celebrities across Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, including 1,676 imposters for the Brazilian soccer star Neymar and 1,389 for the pop star Selena Gomez. While many fake accounts impersonate ordinary people to broadcast propaganda or be sold as followers to people looking to appear more influential, millions of profiles masquerade as athletes, actors, and politicians to try to scam their fans out of money, or worse. Last year, Australian authorities charged a man with more than 900 sex offense charges for posing as Justin Bieber to solicit nude photos from children. The problem weighs on some celebrities who are commonly impersonated, such as the country music singer Kip Moore, who told me he has been approached at concerts by women demanding to know why he stopped messaging them on Instagram. They say he had proposed to them online and they come bearing divorce papers saying they've left their husbands and are ready to be with him. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter ban imposter accounts and say they're trying to crack down. The sites encourage users to look for the blue verified check marks to ensure a celebrity's profile is authentic. They also use software to try to detect scams automatically. But I found that creating imposters wasn't so hard. I recently created more than 20 of my own imposter accounts on Facebook and Instagram, impersonating my own verified profiles on the sites with little issue. And the sites also seem to have issues taking down fake accounts when users report them. I reported more than 30 clear imposters to Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and only received a response to 6 of the reports, all from Instagram, which said they didn't violate its rules. I then told company spokespeople and they removed the fakes.
Okay. So they mentioned, Gabe, the Justin Bieber impersonator, and that's a very serious business there, right? So I am directing what I have to say here about our users that are over 18. We're all straight. We're all in line. Gabe, how bad am I supposed to feel for somebody that can't look for a blue check?
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, when I heard him talking about people who had their, you know, coming to the concert with their divorce papers, that just blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, for real? I'm in there like 7 of this dude on Instagram and you picked the one. Maybe they're just trying to hear what they want to hear. You know what I mean?
Right. Like that, like in that one, the victim is absolutely the country music superstar, right? Like he is the one that has been done wrong. I have trouble feeling bad for people who get fooled by such poor plots. Like if you are like getting old people, you know, that ain't right. You're wrong for that. Like, I mean, you know, I'm not on board with that one. But I'm looking like, yeah, the women that are showing up with their divorce papers based on this dude hollering at them on Instagram. Nah, man, I can't. Nah, I don't. No, I don't feel bad for you. And I understand that, yeah, Facebook and them, for a number of reasons, for people who are not public figures, they need to do a much better job of getting the imposters out of there. Totally. However, I don't feel like they need to be getting the imposters out of there because they need to protect these people from being fooled into thinking that this Neymar dude that has 300 followers isn't the actual Neymar.
Yeah, I'm still kind of here for all these fake Twitter accounts that don't have, like, real at the end of it. Like, I'm the real Bomani Jones.
Yes.
The real Bomani Jones. Fake real Bomani Jones.
And you know, I've had people been doing fake accounts for me for so many years now. Like, I guess part of why this story hits me in a different way is because I'm kind of numb to it to a degree, because I've been, although most of the fake accounts about me are attempting to ridicule me. But it happens. But I remember I never wanted to verify a check. And then one day I was like, no, I need to have this because somebody going to get out here pretending like they me and it's not. Gabe, the verified check been around for like 8 years. I thought everybody knew to look for the verified check. Who's still out here getting fooled by accounts without the verified check? Because if you, by the way, if you're not aware of the verified check or you getting fooled by accounts that don't have it, let me run this by you. I am a very wealthy Nigerian investor, and I have like $20 million, but I need somebody to hold it for me. let me get that account number and your social, and I'll leave a little bit for you after I'm finished.
It sounds like a number of spam emails that I've gotten in the last couple of years.
All capital letters. Like these people right here, like that's my thought is, like when I hear they get old people, I feel bad. When I hear they get young people, I'm kind of like, I mean, it's illegal, but I don't mean I gotta hurt for you.
All right, this last story comes from the tech space and the transportation space, a little bit of both.
This is Heather Schwedell from Slate. I recently wrote about Plane Bay, the story that went viral on Twitter over the 4th of July holiday. A woman named Rosie Blair was on a flight from New York to Dallas with her boyfriend, and she asked another woman on the flight to switch seats so the two of them could sit together. Then this woman ends up sitting in front of Blair and her boyfriend, and wouldn't you know it, the guy next to her turns out to be kind of a hunk, and the woman herself is not so bad. So lo and behold, Blair is sitting behind these two hot people and watching what she thinks is a real-life romantic company unfold. And she starts secretly documenting the two of them flirting on social media. They were chatting, they were joking around, they were kind of like nuzzling together on the armrest. And at one point, Blair said they even got up to go to the bathroom at the same time. So at first, the internet went nuts for this. Everyone was swooning, and the story was getting tons of pickup on Twitter and from the media saying, you know, cutest thing ever. And we've seen all these crazy airplane stories happening lately, and it seemed like this was actually kind of a good one for once. You know, who doesn't love a love story? But then when you get to thinking, you know, anytime something like this gets really big, you have to wonder, what is fishy here? So in this case, I think it's that these people's lives were being documented without their consent for thousands and maybe even millions of strangers. Blair blurred out their faces, but she also put all these details about them out there that they did not sign on for. And later, when this made the Today Show and got other major media, the man was happy to reveal his identity. He is actually a former pro soccer player named Ewan Holden. But the woman only gave out her first name, Helen, which shows that she might not be so comfortable with the whole thing. And what seems like a fun 15 minutes of fame for Ewan Holden is turning out to be something else altogether for her. So the saga of Plane Bay really raises questions about privacy in public spaces, and the lesson may be that it's not okay to cast someone as a character in your viral story without actually asking them first.
Well, let me tell you what I found interesting about this. I had to change the way that I did this because, like, before I do a lot more TV now than I used to. And I used to do stuff like that all the time, like take pictures of people I saw places, you know, and just put it on the internet, because all kinds of people do that. And I didn't see myself as like being quote unquote famous or anything like that. So I didn't see any issue at all with doing such things. And then I'll never forget one day I put a picture up of a dude who I thought was dressed ridiculously, and he was in the restaurant that I was in, and he also followed me, and he also used to be a really big fan of mine until I laughed at his ensemble. And I do contend, though, in that example, he thought that stuff was all funny until it was about him. When it was about other people, he got his chuckle on. But I did think that that became a real point that I had to consider at that point, which is like, yo, man, they did not necessarily sign up for that. And I would be furious if someone did some of these things to me. And so, yeah, when you do decide to put out these stories and you say you're hearing it, I think that people, here's what I do think happens overall with social media on this. People at once get on social media because they want to be heard. But then at the same time, they don't think anybody actually hears them, because they're like, only their little corner of the internet hears it or whatever. Okay, cool. But let me retweet you and see what happens. All of a sudden, you can be famous.
Everybody want to be a star, but nobody want to be a star.
That's right. But I don't think that people really get how easily that stuff can catch fire and how overwhelming it can wind up being to others. Because, you know, this, I'd say this story, it's a love story and everything else. And that dude wanted his name to be known. He said the woman didn't want her name to be known. How you know that woman ain't got no man?
Yep.
You know, how you know that? How do you know any of these things? We don't know any of these things about these people, man. So I thought it was, I didn't keep up with the story as it happened, but I read about it and I was like, yo, this is actually a really interesting thing. And I do think that we probably need to be a little more careful about some of the people that we put on the internet.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. With you being gone and missing out on the 4th of July and all those good cookouts, I thought it might be a good idea to put out for some good cookout stories, whether they were summer cookout stories, 4th of July stories, whatever stories. We got some good ones. Our first one is from Lee in New York.
Yo, Bo, what's going on, man? Big fan. My name is Leon. I'm calling from New York. I'm going to tell you a cookout story about 2 years ago. I was in college at this time, and I met this shorty, real, real pretty girl. And she invited me to a cookout. She's like, oh, you know, I got a big house. I'm going to invite all my friends over. So, of course, your boy, I was in college at the time. Any free food that I could get my hands on, of course I'm going to come through. So, you know, I come through. She tell me, oh, yeah, I want you to meet a couple of my friends. They're coming up from New York. Meanwhile, at this time, I do have another girlfriend in the city in New York. So, anyway, you know, my girl's telling me to come down to the city for her own cookout, this and that. And I'm like, nah, it's all right, baby. I'm going to do my own thing. Long story short, I'm at the crib, at Shorty's crib, eating all the food up, enjoying myself, drinks on drinks. And the Shorty's like, yo, come meet my friend from New York. Be it. It was my girl. But my girl's with another dude. So, yeah, basically, everybody got caught that night. It was the get caught cookout. So you already know, bro, man. Take care and have your latest fun.
First of all, he was so New York, right? Like, that was the best part. But it was the get caught cookout. It was like, it was my girl and she was with another dude. Woo!
Yeah, we didn't expect it to end that way.
No. And yo, shout out to his girl. What would she have done if he'd have been like, yo, yeah, I'm going to come through to your cookout. Right? Like, or was it that her cookout was going to be this cookout, and then if he had said he was going with her, she wouldn't have shown up with the other dude. Damn. And one thing I appreciated about it, though, he ain't had no hard feelings. He's like, I'm out here tripping, too.
Yeah, he got to share that story and be honest just for the yes. comic relief of it at this
he
point.
He loves telling that story.
All right. Our second story comes from Daniel in California.
Yo, Bomani. So glad you're back. This is Daniel. Just want to tell you a quick cookout story. Didn't go so well. Living in Lake Tahoe about 10 years ago, middle of the winter, tons of snow. Decided we're going to build a big old snow fort, throw a grill in there, grill up some burgers, and enjoy our day. Probably should have given it some ventilation, too. Sent 3 people to the hospital with carbon monoxide poisoning. Not that good of an idea. If you're going to grill outside in a snow cave, at least ventilate it. Definitely learned my lesson. Anyway, man, love the show.
Anyway, ain't no anyway on carbon monoxide poisoning. Damn!
I wasn't sure, you know, what message I was going to be projecting there by allowing this guy on the show, but it was just too funny. It was just too funny.
I wouldn't have thought of that either, by the way. I wouldn't have thought that this grill is going to kill us all. Yeah. I wondered, though, if there was one person that was like, guys, you probably need some ventilation. Nah, we'd be all right. This does feel like a story where he left out the part about whoever's girlfriend it was that told you dummies not to do this. And y'all waved her off. And then she had to take you out of the hospital.
Or someone just kind of slinked into the background, was like, guys, I don't know about this. This
right.
isn't a good idea. I'll see you later.
All
I'm
right.
going to go home. And then finds out like the next day, oh, by the way, so-and-so went to the hospital. It's like, oh, well, yep. Yeah, maybe I should have put a stop to that.
Told you.
All right, this last story, the guy didn't give his name, but I thought it was the funniest out of the bunch.
But Monty, I got one for you. Labor Day, about 20 years ago, my mom had a neighbor, Ms. Dolores. Ms. Dolores is a sweet lady. Her house is the party house. So anyway, we're over here for Labor Day weekend. Everybody's grilling out, cooking out, getting a sip on everything. My brother and I decided to make a liquor run. Had meat on the grill. Everybody's having a good time. Ms. Dolores is a good person, but man, Ms. Dolores had male relatives and family that had been incarcerated numerous times, so nobody ever wanted to beef with them. Anyway, good place to hang out. We leave. We come back maybe 45 minutes later. All the meat and stuff was on the grill. So prior to us leaving, Ms. Dolores is father had showed up with a cooler, and he had other meats, as he called it. So he opened up the cooler and was like, yeah, it's going to be good. We look inside the cooler, and played wide open and gutted was a raccoon. I mean, I was like, where is he cooking that at? Somebody said, he planned on grilling it on the pit. I'm like, yeah, right. So we leave. We come back. Bobby, him and Ms. Dolores, they had beef about, like, who put the stuff on the grill or whatever. They say, I know Bobby was Ms. Dolores' boyfriend. Her and the granddad had beef. You ruined everybody else's meat. So they had words. So he got in the grandfather's face. And next thing I know, we heard an open-handed slap. And then I heard some stuff like, don't you ever put your hands on me, young man. That was the end of it. But we got a good laugh out of it because as we sat there and ate, people eating potato salad, passing ribs around and stuff like that, my man Bobby had to sit there with a straight face, knowing that everybody was looking at him because he was embarrassed and he took that open-handed slap. That's it. Peace. One love.
Gabe, there's a reason why he didn't leave a name because some people don't need to leave their names. That was Stacy in Brooklyn. and I don't know how many stories are more on brand than that one from my man Stacy in Brooklyn, including grilling up a raccoon.
The funniest thing I thought to me was that he wanted to highlight the open hand slap, but I was like, well, hold on, let's back it up here. What about the raccoon, man?
The raccoon!
What the hell? Right. I don't think I've ever heard in my entire life someone grilling up a raccoon.
Oh, man. No, people, I mean, I've heard of people cooking raccoons, but I ain't never heard anybody throwing a coon on the grill.
You've heard of people cooking up raccoons before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You from California, man. You don't understand how these country folks get down. Raccoons, rabbits, you know, squirrels, all kinds of, they vermin. Yeah, people eat them. People
I did go to a restaurant once called the Roquel Cafe.
Oh.
But, you know, they weren't serving no raccoons there.
Yeah, well, yeah. But there you go. You learn something new about the world just like that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you. Thank you to Amy Held of NPR. Check out her story on the FAA and airline passengers as they won't regulate what the size of the seats might be. Also, thanks to Jack Nikas of the New York Times for his story on social media and imposters and how, man, people getting fooled out here. Thank you to Heather Schwadel. Check out her story at Slate on hashtag Plain Bay, as maybe we need to ask some questions about what we put up on the internet about strangers. Also, remember, check out the Right Time Book Club. The book is Friday Night Lights. We'll have our next episode of the book club on July 31st. July 31st is the next one. That'll get us through chapter 8. So chapters 5 through 8 is what we're going to go through in the month of July on the show. Remember to rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. We like 5 stars. You want to give us 4? I mean, some people are haters, right? We would like to 5. It would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for taking a break with me as I took the vacation, and we will be back with you in a couple of days.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.